morning. You are tuning into Recovery Radio at the Caboose, the Enlightened Radio. That's www.enlightenedradio.org. And I'm down here in the studio. I want to talk about recovery, the new year that just came in. And, you know, we're going to talk about some smart things. We're going to bring 2018 in with, I don't know, just a lot of people turning towards recovery. You know, I'm not here to convince you to do anything but choose to live today. So I'm just so grateful to be here. And so we're going to start it off with a song that I really like. And it kind of makes me think about how far we've come in terms of getting people into recovery or putting a highlighter on the behavior that starts you down that path of addiction and the darkness. And, you know, I want to explore some topics, the phraseology that we use. I really was having a time trying to figure out why I was telling myself that I was getting high when actually I was very low all the time. But I called it getting high, you know. So maybe some of you clinicians or some of you people with the accolades behind your name can call me and or either send me an email. My email address is BOYDBW@MSN.com. Or you can call me or instant message me at James Boyd on Facebook and instant messaging. Give me your concerns, your questions, your comments. Let me know how things are going. We especially want to provide some information here on Recovery Radio about how to get help, what services are available to us in this culture of addiction and recovery and all that goes with that. And so, but I'm going to need your help, especially Berkeley and Jefferson County, West Virginia, Morgan County, all the surrounding counties. I'm going to need your help here in Harpers Ferry, where we're broadcasting, because we need to have this information and this podcast and all the internet capabilities that we have and all the information capabilities that we have to be able to go over the information that's being provided, to do some fact checking. Okay, all of you fact checkers, I want you to get your fact checking things out and do some fact checking for me as I broadcast. You know, I'm set up to come to you over the airwaves every Tuesday starting at 9 a.m. And I usually go for about an hour. Hopefully, you know, as you all kind of tune in and send me questions and topics and things that you want to talk about, that, you know, we can expand that. Because, I believe that the information highway is one of the tools or the weapons that we're going to use to fight this addiction. And I'm encouraged by how things are going thus far, because there's a massive amount of conversation surrounding heroin, opioid addiction, overdose, and deaths. I mean, it's reaching into the neonatal units where babies are being born to addiction. And these conversations need to be had. So I was going to open up with Across 110th Street with Bobby Womack, and I'm hoping that my engineer can find that. I call him my engineer, but actually he's just a godsend to me because he's very brilliant in this area. Across 110th Street by Bobby Womack. I want the people to get a taste of, because this has been going on for a long time, this heroin addiction and this overdoses. It's just, you know, the game is different, but the misery is the same. You know? And so back when Mr. Womack was coming through there, because he was addicted, he struggled with substance abuse, but he made this very telling song that was kind of current. It was about the times then, but we're looking at the shift that it has taken. It's picked up steam, and you know, the delivery mechanisms and the content of the poison has changed, but the misery is still there. Listen to Bobby for a moment.
I was the third brother of five, doing whatever I had to do to survive. I'm not saying what I did was all right.
trying to break out of the ghetto was a day-to-day fight. Being down so long, yet nothing crossed my mind. And I knew there was a better way of life, and I was just trying to find. You don't know what you do till you put under pressure. Across 110th Street is a hell of a tester. Across 110th Street, pimps try to catch a woman that's weak. Across 110th Street, pushers won't let the junkie go free. Across 110th Street, woman trying to catch a trick on the street. Shooting that dope man you're copping out. Take my advice, it's either live or die. You got to be strong if you wanna survive. The family on the upper side of town will catch hell without a ghetto around. In every city you'll find the same thing going down. Harlem is the capital of every ghetto town. Let me sing it. Across 110th Street, pimps trying to catch a woman that's weak. Across 110th Street, wishes won't let the junkie go free. Oh, across 110th Street, a woman trying to catch a trick on the street. Ooh, baby. Across 110th Street, you can find it all.
Flight 710, the Cabo San Lucas, now boarding gate 103, first class only, flight 710.
Yeah, that was Bobby Womack coming across 110th Street back in the 60s and 70s when heroin was open market all across the country. And it's headed back that way, but kind of in a subtle. It has taken a paradigm shift, and it's affecting more and a different set of folk. And but we're not going to talk about what it is doing. We're going to talk about what we can do to combat it, to arrest it, to put it in check. One of the lines, one of the lyrics, he said, you don't know what you'll do until you're put under pressure. Let me kind of elaborate on that a little bit. I was put under pressure for a lot of years because of my heroin addiction. And some of the things that I did, I just didn't think I was capable of doing. Like, stick with me here, because I'm going to try and get your mind into a picture. They talk about having a monkey on your back. Well, I had a whole family of monkeys on my back when I was in my active addiction, heroin use. I had two baby monkeys in each back pocket. I had two cousin monkeys in my front pocket. I had the mama and the daddy on my back. Mama was first, because I ain't gonna let daddy get up against my skin with himself, but he would mount himself on mama's back. And I carried that load around for over 30 years. So you never know what you're capable of until you put under a lot of pressure. So I'm speaking to somebody out there today that's going through something, but the good thing about it is if you're listening to this, you made it into 2018, coming from what I'm sure, if you're in active addiction or if you're a loved one of someone who is in active addiction, the monkeys and the family of monkeys is still the same. You know, you got them on your back, you're dragging them around. And the other thing is that the pushers won't let the junkie go free. That kind of stood out to me because we've come into a situation where the pushers are being recognized as not just the ghetto pimps and the prostitutes and the people who are running around with the, that's the small, that's the little guy. So the country has highlighted exactly who the real pushers are. You know, we can't call them by name, but we can call them by company, and we'll do that. You know, they're referring to them as Big Pharma now. And so, you know, one of the segments that I'd like to do on here on the Recovery Radio is I'd like to talk to you about your back in the day stories. You know, you ever had your grandfather say, well, when we were coming up, we did this, that, and the other. And so I want to talk to you about how addiction has evolved and some of the back in the day stories. And people can call in and or just send me an email and I'll raise those questions or those comments on air. It's BOYDBW at MSN.com, 304-839-7924. And just get involved with this thing, because I believe that one of the ways that we can combat this thing, arrest it, or kind of slow it down so we can really, really take a good look at it, is through community connections, community cooperation. Sometimes you have the thing about this disease, this pestilence, is that it's a distraction. It separates, it divides, and it conquers some people, because, you know, using this poison is, you know, some people end up, their bottom is the cemetery, you know. So we can address those things. We can talk about those issues. You know, I want you to just think about this. A delivery system, which is what the heroin and the opioids, it's a delivery system to your pleasure center. It's like UPS in black. Now picture that. And every day you get a delivery. You get a delivery of indecisiveness. You get delivered, you know, a poverty blow. You get UPS in black delivers the firing, the losing of your job. It delivers the information about how good it would feel to be able to, rather than pay your rent, you buy drugs. And it delivers despair. UPS in black. Just stick with that picture for a minute. Because when you're in active addiction, when you're doing the things that you know for a fact that are destructive, demeaning, it has a domino effect, because it carries with it the ability to take down families, generations even, because Bobby Womack and his group, that was back in the 60s and early 70s. Here it is, 2018, and we're having these same conversations. And, you know, I know for some people it's better, easier said than done. In the community, but that's when all the advocates, and we have a lot of people that's advocating for the tearing down and the destigmatizing addiction and all that's carried with it. There's a lot of community groups that are doing a lot of things, and so we don't want to take anything from any of that. And I think that my dream is to be able to have a platform where I can talk to just regular folk who have been there and are on their way back. And by the way, a big shout out to some guys that I met when I was driving a van service for a particular counseling group. And I met these guys, and they were, I met them via drug court, is what the adult drug court. And now, you know, some of the guys are working on 700-800 days clean and sober. So those are the guys that I would like to work with. So if you guys are listening, if you tune in, I'm gonna send you the link. Josh and Ian, you all know who you are. Congratulations, man. You guys, that's the team that I'm trying to put together. People who have been there and they've come out of the thicket, and they have decided to live. You know, and Bobby Womack sings about it. He was kind of ahead of his time, but he was strung out on heroin as well. You know, up in Harlem and running around up there with the Nicky Barnes crowd and the Frank Lucas crowd and selling the Blue Magic. But it says that pushers won't let the junkie go free. Now, who? Well, think about it. Back in the 60s and 70s, when you said pusher, this idea, not a guy with a suit on, came to mind. Not a guy with a PhD in this and a doctorate in that, and not a guy who came out of the oil fields of Texas or Iran, Iraq, those oil countries, Saudi Arabia, with his pockets so full of money that, you know, he has nothing else to do with it except to put misery upon a lot of just so many people with this money. So that's the new face of the pusher these days. And so here on Recovery Radio, I think that my job is to be well informed, to get out in the community, put boots on the ground, elicit the help of so many wonderful people that I have met since I got clean and sober for over 8,000, well over 8,000 days, by the way. So, you know, my sponsor says you need to encourage yourself. So that's what I'm doing this morning. I'm encouraging myself. And sometimes when I sit at home and look back over my life and how wonderful things have gotten since I stopped getting low, I ain't gonna call it high no more, because I was never high. If I look at it and turn it around, I was always low, nodding out, burning my fingers up with cigarettes. You all know the deal. So, you know, it's my job, according to my sponsor, to go out and to the highways and the byways and compel the people to come to him so that he can give them the same information that he gave me. I want you to choose life and not death. And if you're a loved one struggling with someone in the home that's addicted to drugs and they keep going through the bank account and all that, people, you have to make a phone call. Get some help. We got the Hope Dealers. They have a group every Sunday in downtown Martinsburg, and it's a Nar-Non group, and it's where people meet for about an hour, hour and a half sometimes when the conversation gets really good, where grandmothers and aunts and uncles are coming in looking for help to get their loved one through this addiction process. Because when you begin to take heroin, I'm going to speak to heroin because that's what I was addicted to. When you begin to take heroin, your capacity to think well is diminished. It's diminished greatly. And so the loved ones who come into these Nar-Anon meetings just want to know what is going on. They have never seen something grab people. And, you know, you got those who will say, well, you can just stop. And all. That's okay. They just don't know. You know, here on Recovery Radio, I'm going to talk to you about hope. And how that people do recover, you know, people get out of trouble. And I want you to understand, if you're actively addicted and you're listening to me right now, understand this. This is what I understand. I understand that to come out of addiction into recovery is kind of traumatic. It's a behavior that most laymen try to say to you that this is what you need to do. They don't understand or even want to look at the idea that coming out of doing wrong and doing drugs and breaking the law into not doing wrong, not doing drugs, and not breaking the laws of the country is trauma. You know, so people get stuck between this and that, which is where recidivism comes in. When you get stuck between this and that, you are bound to go back to something that's seemingly pleasurable. And so that's what I did over and over and over again. I kept relapsing, going into rehab, relapsing, because there was no after rehab, then what question posed to me. So that's what I want to pose this question to those who need to be held accountable and those who are being manipulated by those who need to be held accountable, and then just the plain old ignorant. You know, we need after rehab, then what? That is what is the thing that will get people to the table. You know, one of the things that I found was that kept me going is my anonymity. That boy, that kept me really messed up because, you know, I was so afraid that people were going to view me as less than. And I began to view myself that way. So that was my behavior. You know, if you tell people, if you say that, okay, you're not going to do this anymore, you're not going to do that anymore, and you do it anyway, you lose sight of what it is that you're capable of. One of the things that that excites me about recovery is that the Recovery Cafe model is an alternative, a therapeutic supportive community founded on the truth that every human being is precious and worthy of love, regardless of their earlier trauma, mental and emotional anguish. Across 110th Street by Bobby Womack. Some of the things that I came across when I was getting clean was the idea that some magic bullet was going to come into my life and help me to be able to stay stopped, and it just didn't happen that way. But I'm happy to say that I'm celebrating some kind of highlighted magic moments in my life. As I walk into recovery, to be able to tell people about my journey from one side of darkness to the other side of light in my life. And so I don't use those substances anymore. I'm kind of on automatic pilot right now with my sobriety, and I want to use this platform to be able to invite other people into the fold. I'm doing something now with the Recovery Cafe model here in Berkeley County, because we need something after rehab. Then what? What do you do when you come out of rehab? What do you do with all that time that you got on your hands? So, like I say, you do things that are different because you have a certain amount of time on your hands, and you need something to fill that up. So the Recovery Cafe model is, you know, I would have maybe inside the cafe where people could come and get off the streets. Most of the times people are out, especially during this cold weather. If you're addicted to heroin or some other opioid, you spend a lot of your time out in the freezing cold trying to get high or low. And, the Recovery Cafe, without the stigma, without the judgment, is a place where people can go and maybe, enjoy a chess game and a hot cup of cocoa. Or maybe go to a place where you can kind of sit down and talk with other people about what it is that you're going through. Something that's not so clinical. You know, I love the AA and the NA meetings. But after NA and after AA, then what? Where do you go? What do you do with your time? You know, how do you make ends meet when there is no meeting place for poverty? You know, you can't. There are no ends to be met when you're living in poverty, because you can't really think, actually, because one of the things that I found when I was going in and out of rehabs is they wanted me to juggle. You know, once I came out of rehab, I had to find a job. Usually I came out and there was a homeless situation going on. I would go and live with somebody that I used to get high with. And so these are the things, that's how I carried my life for over 30 years. And so I come to you this morning talking about recovery, long-term recovery, because all this hit and miss stuff that's going on, the Recovery Cafe model is referred to by the larger behavioral health community as a recovery-oriented system of care. In ROSC, that's the Recovery System of Care, meet people where they are on the recovery continuum. The Recovery Cafe model traditionally, a person receives support when he or she is in crisis and finds that the support is removed once he or she begins to experience stability. Yet, one of the things that I found was, as long as I was in a controlled environment, and those were most of the rehabs, things went really well. But once I stepped outside of that controlled environment and I was left to my own devices, I would usually fall and relapse. And mostly because it was in my head to relapse anyway. That idea has always been there because that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to use. I tried to use successfully for many years. And I would always get my money around the first of the month and I would try to flip it. I could never actually get it to stand on its to flip all the way over. I could get it to stand on its head, but to actually flip over, could never do that. And so I call that my I couldn't use successfully. Probably if I could have figured out how to do that, to use successfully, then I would probably still be using right now. But the Recovery Cafe models, I'm really excited about that whole idea, because I think I've found a place in Berkeley County where the funding could be had to where we could set up a model like that, because people who are addicted, especially to heroin, sometimes they find themselves running around in the middle of the night, early morning hours, with something that's illegal on their minds in most cases. And because you live to use and you use to live, I find with heroin addiction, and it's a tough road. I mean, you spend all your time, trying to get monies and figure out ways to get drugs and in your system, because in this cold weather, in this climate, I know that most people who are addicted to heroin, once you get that heroin in your system, it warms you up, allegedly. You know, your mind is telling you that you're okay because it craves this substance, and you'll go out and get it by any means necessary, is what I find. All the years that I was addicted, coming from being homeless twice, actually, severely homeless, 1 year in Harlem. I was outside and sleeping under bridges, and I slept in a cardboard box, a Frigidaire box. I don't know if any of y'all remember those big heavy-duty refrigerator boxes that you could get from any department store on the side of the building and drag it into some empty lot and make a home out of it. And these are the things that I did when I was in my active addiction in the homeless community. I would invite those who advocate for getting people off the street and into rehab to just go out and experience homelessness for yourself before you can really offer any advice. They got the Recovery Coach Academy, which is being sponsored by a group under Senator Unger's care that is in Charlestown. The name of it eludes me right now, but I'll have it. I'll have that information at my next podcast, where you can go there. It's a Recovery Coach Academy. And I like the idea of the word academy being used, because recovery coaches have to be well informed. They have to really be able to help people without, you know, any reservations. And so in order to say you know what a homeless person is going through without experiencing it yourself firsthand, you can help, but your help is limited. It's minimal. Unless you can go out and be willing to go among the people in the frigid cold and to offer yourself. Sometimes, you know, it'll work. And I'm not saying that whatever it is that you're doing to try and help this situation, it's much needed. It's just that it has to be put in the right direction, in the right perspective, in order for it not to harm people. Because when you're addicted to heroin especially, most of the times you don't want people talking to you unless they're going to help you to get low, unless they're going to help you to buy yourself a dose. And some people talk about, well, I was using $500 a day of heroin. I needed $500 just to get well. If heroin costs $50 for one dose, and you're saying that you need $500 of these same doses, I bet if I gave you $150, you wouldn't turn it down. you'd use it and you'd keep going until you got what you thought you needed to get well. And once you get well, what do you do after that? You continue to seek and pile up those monkeys that I was talking about earlier that resides with you. They're constantly on your back. You know, you can walk out of that. You can really walk out of that. You know, my sponsor tells me all the time, you know, just when you look at people who are addicted or living a certain lifestyle, you can say to yourself, but for the grace of God, there go I, because that was me. And I realized that, you know, my sponsor was fixing me up for such a time as this so that I can be able to give back to the community in a meaningful way. So the Recovery Radio platform for me is just a really inspiring way for me to be able to give back. And I bring a lot of experience with addiction, being addicted, and also being someone who's in recovery. You know, I'm not just in recovery. Recovery is in me now. And so that's what makes me the warrior that I believe I am in terms of being able to provide some information about stability and some hope. You know, I have friends right now who they've gotten clean and sober, and then they have other problems to crop up, not just physical problems, but financial problems. And they're running up against all these roadblocks time and time after people can't pay their rent. And people are having conversations at home with spousal, with loved ones that's causing a kind of a subtle destruction of marriages and families. People are getting these ideas in their head, especially the younger ones, about how they can help out. You know, a good friend of mine, actually, he's my wife's cousin. I call him my cousin. He's the grandfather of a young man. His name is Shakur Stevenson. And he's a boxer, actually not just a boxer, but he's extraordinary because of his journey, not because of his the fact that he can really, really box. He won a silver medal in the last year's Olympics as a boxer from Newark, New Jersey. And, I'm just impressed by that behavior, because his grandfather, Wally, said to me, he said, James, you know, if all these churches... They got churches on every corner. If all the churches would just get a football team of these young men, or a basketball or whatever team, men and women, because, you know, they got women, little young girls playing football now, but just get them off the street, bring them in and start a club, some kind of athletic club in the church. If everybody would just get one or two people, can you imagine what kind of an impact that would have on the community? Because there's churches everywhere in Martinsburg. And so I challenge you, you know, church, to just get a couple of people from your block, whatever block your street is on, I mean your church is on, get that community and get some athletes, get these kids off the street. Go out in the evenings. I mean, it's cold and it's winter right now, so most of the kids are either in school or hunkered in the house. But when it starts to get warm, and you all remember last year what happened during the summer. You know, there were some tragic moments with the youngsters. But we can avert that. We can go out into the community. And I'm a strong proponent of boots on the ground. You know, in order for me to understand what's inside the homeless shelter, I need to go in there and take a look around for myself, get the information for myself. My sponsor told me, he said, don't just believe what I said. Check for yourself. See that the information that I'm giving you is the right information. See that the way that I'm telling you to go is the right way to go. I can prove it. That's what my sponsor said. So I started listening to him over 8,000 days ago. And everything that he has shared with me thus far has kept me in what I like to refer to as hashtag stay stopped. You know, it's three components, I believe, in this country that we need to address, and they're being addressed in a mighty way, and I'm going to name them off to you. One is hashtag don't start. Hashtag don't start. I got a little, what I call her, my word warrior. Her name is Mindy. You know who I'm talking about, Mindy. How you doing? And she is the one that I would send into the school system to talk to the kids. She is a word warrior, and I refer to her as such. And the second phase is hashtag stop. So people who are addicted to heroin and other opioids, we need to get them to a place where they stop. They stop. And so that's where the rehabs and the detox centers come in. That's where we need to raise up a group of folk that track these people and visit their homes. I call it the neighborhood intervention. You know, we need to get some information so that we can reach out to folk after they've come in for an overdose or something like that and released from the hospital. That's when we need to catch them. Now, once you get them into rehab and they get ready to discharge from the rehab, hashtag stay stopped. After rehab, then what? Where do we go after rehab? Well, I asked my sponsor that over 8,000 days ago. And he said, go into your community. Go and be of service. Go and be of good cheer. Stop taking shortcuts. Do things in decency and order. You know, I said earlier, I understand the trauma of going from active addiction to inactive addiction. There is a space between that, and it's called after rehab, then what? So to get to long-term sobriety, you have to cross that minefield between active addiction and active inaction, or active non-addiction. I get confused a little bit on those two things, but I can tell you for sure that I have practiced it. I have been given the instructions, and I want to invite you to come and follow, you know, because you can choose life. You really can. It doesn't seem like it right now because you're probably, you know, people come out of Christmas holiday, you know, and I hope nobody's people, brothers and cousins, and got locked up over the Christmas holiday, because that was one of the things that kept me in and out of jail. When these holidays come around or somebody's birthday come around, you know, I thought I needed to go. Well, first of all, I wouldn't spend no money on nobody. The only thing I spent money on was heroin. But I would go because I still wanted to participate in the holiday season. And I still wanted to be the guy that bought his children their birthday presents. And so I would go and try and steal them. Well, usually I'd end up in jail somehow, you know. But that became a minor discomfort for me, because the jail provided a place for me to get an oil change, because I would do stuff. I found out that I could do misdemeanors and stay high and maybe provide an incentive or two to somebody that was bold enough to hang around with me. And I'm talking about family and kids now. But I'd usually end up in jail. So I'm inviting you to rethink that. There needs to be a paradigm shift in your thinking. We need to reinvigorate. We need to revitalize. We need to lift up your thinking to where it's headed in a direction that's conducive to a good life, a life of living. You know, it's not always a bed of roses, but it's a bed nonetheless. It's not your deathbed, is what I'm trying to say. You know, and I'm just so happy that last night I went to sleep. I didn't pass out, which is what I remember doing. And, you know, it became sort of the norm. And this morning I woke up instead of coming to. Half the time, once I woke up when I was in my active addiction, I knew where I was. And I knew where I wanted to be. I wanted to go somewhere. And I usually stayed close to wherever they were selling heroin. I wouldn't go nowhere and stay that long unless they really had a steady supply of heroin. So I usually hung out in places like New York and Philadelphia. And, you know, but I moved to Martinsburg thinking, okay, I'm getting away. I'm changing my people, places, and things. Let me get out of New Jersey. I moved to Martinsburg about 15 years ago, and I moved here for one reason I thought was valid, and that was because there was no heroin here. Well, little did I suspect that my sponsor was bringing me to this place for such a time as this so that I can share my experience and maybe provide that ladder that someone needs to climb out of this hole of heroin addiction. Because now I find out, well, not just now, it's been a while, that Berkeley County has been overwhelmed with the heroin addiction and overdoses. And, you know, and it's, like I said, the game has changed, but the misery is still the same. So I can share the misery part, but what I really like to talk about is recovery, because I think the recovery is still the same as well. But you have to get to a place, you have to get to a place where you can actually hear what it is that someone is telling you about how to choose to live, you know, and not die. And we know the outcome of continued heroin abuse or opioid abuse. We know the outcome, and it doesn't just stop because you get put in the cemetery. It has a lasting effect on the younger generations, the kids, the curiosity. I was talking to you about the UPS in black. They wear brown right now. Happy time. Gifts coming from UPS. But picture those guys all in black and what they deliver. They bring in misery. And they do it with the quickness. When's the last time, if you were in active addiction and you was in a controlled environment and you did well? Well, you was either locked up or you was in a rehab or you were mandated by the court system to stay free of drugs and alcohol and whatever it caused you to do whatever you did to get locked up. And as soon as you got out, and you stood around and you made some phone calls and people were happy to see you again, here comes the UPS man in black. And he's usually carrying exactly what your pleasure center is seeking. Your endorphins, the thing that causes you to feel good about yourself. That's old heroin, Mr. Heroin, dressed in black. He's coming around. And most of the times when I got out, my friends, which most of them are dead now, was giving me a free bag of heroin. It was good. So when Bobby Womack says pushers won't let the junkie go free across 110th Street, there's a game plan for your behind if you're going to continue to use. There is a game plan out there for you. And Bobby Womack was talking about that. Pushers won't let the junkie go free. So I'm here to tell you that you have authority over that. You know, you have to stop asking for permission to be happy and free. You just have to go ahead and do it. Stop asking for permission and just get up and do it. We have to get in a place where we can be a community that's recovery ready. So when people come out of the rehabs and the things of that nature, because we're getting some things set up, you know, there's a tremendous effort that's going on in the community with all the advocacy programs, the HEART program, the Hope Dealers, the Recovery Resource Center, all the information, the EMS, the fire department is being overwhelmed, the police department, they're coming up with new and brighter ideas. And they're going to all come together. I'm very optimistic about what is going on. So I said, well, you know, what can I do? And my sponsor said, after rehab, then what? You know, I stand out downtown Martinsburg often. And that is one of the places that I would like for the Recovery Cafe to manifest itself. And I stand out and I watch weekend, weekdays. After rehab, then what? People are being released back onto the streets. After they do whatever it is that they do, they go to court and they obey all the rules. And, you know, it lasts a while you're in this controlled environment. Thank God for some of us, it lasts, it takes. But we have to do our part in the community. President Obama said it when he was in office. We have to become recovery-ready communities here in the United States of America. The Recovery Cafe model, you know, I looked it up online and I reached out to the folk in Seattle, Washington that came up with that idea. And there's a, you know, you can look at it for yourself, Recovery Cafe, because I want you all to kind of talk to your community representatives, all the organizations, and have them to take a look at this, because we're going forward to get people into treatment. But treatment is something that has to get in you. After rehab, then what? Look up Recovery Cafe and just get back with me at BOYDBW@MSN.com, which is my email address. Or just call me at 304-839-7924. And I got a call from Seattle, Washington, or I got an email, and I called them back about the Recovery Cafe. And so I'm going to be introducing that model at the next heart meeting, which is held at the hospital, the McCormick Center, in that area in Berkeley County, West Virginia. And I'm going to introduce that model, because it seems that everybody's, you know, getting people into treatment, getting people off the street, but they can't stay there forever. After rehab, then what? Ask yourself that question. If you've relapsed multiple times, it seems that we need to start trying something differently. People, places, and things, wherever you go, there you are. You take you with you. So the geographical locations, all that stuff works fine for a while. But, you know, after 20 years of sobriety, I understand that people, places, and things will always be a challenge for everybody, not just people who are addicted to substance, but for everybody. It's almost like people, places, and things become the boogeyman for you. I was challenged when I first started working in the community as an advocate, because I got fired from a job that was all about recovery. Actually, I got fired from a job, and I was fired wrongly because the judge said so. And, you know, I'm not going to go into the details, but, you know, it was just an example. My sponsor was saying, OK, let's see what you do with this. Usually statistics say that when a person is in recovery, short term or long term recovery, and a traumatic event happens, a change in your circumstances, a loss of income, a loss of a loved one, people will usually relapse. Well, I didn't, and I decided not to. And I decided to stick up for the truth, because I found out from my sponsor that not only will the truth set you free, but it'll make you free. And the truth will make you some money. Because when I took my case to court, I won. And so you run and tell that. That's what Bobby Womack would say. Now you run and tell that. You're a little, you know, I ain't going to say the word that he would use, but but it's just amazing to me how much strength and ability we do have when we decide to choose life and not death. When we let recovery get in us, we become these strong advocates for not only for ourselves, but for our families and for our community. And so I invite you all to just come out. And then we're going to have to deal with the judicial system, too, in Berkeley and Jefferson County. There's a young lady, her name is Kimberly Crockett, and she's running for district judge. And so you're going to hear that name more often than not on Recovery Radio, because I believe that she's in our corner in terms of the judicial. Not only will she be able to mandate and set rules and boundaries and to have a conversation in the judicial system, but she also understands that she needs to listen. And I believe that she is a listener, and she takes action. So vote for Kimberly Crockett. So that's a what do you call it? A plug? It's called a anyway. So Recovery Radio, and you know, and I'm just so thankful for this this opportunity to come to you. And you know, I just want us to work together. This Recovery Radio for me is not an opportunity for me to be able to talk to you all, but for you all to talk to me, and where I can listen. I need some fact checkers, and I will always try and get it right, and I am always the one who admits that he's wrong. That's part of my recovery. Humility, That's one of the things in my recovery. When I work with someone and you have an organization where you have committees and everything, you can give me the mop and the bucket, and I'll start right there with that, because I want to help, and I don't care who gets the credit. It's just that we need to start saving people's lives, and we need to get more and more aggressive, because I can tell you, you know, we're going through all the protocol and all the red tape and everything. Heroin addiction and people who are the pushers, they don't have protocol. You know, there is no shame in their game. They're not a respecter of persons. They're not. And neither is my sponsor, by the way. But the addiction and the people who push the pharmaceuticals and the people who are bringing the fentanyl into this country and where we're getting it. You know, I found out, by the way, I would be remiss if I didn't mention this, and I would be raked over the coals from Dr. Aldous, Dr. John Aldous, medical assistant treatment. Like I said, the game has changed, but the misery is the same. You know, and I endorse medical assistant treatment. You know, the things that they give you in the clinics. There used to be methadone, but it has evolved into some other areas right now that are more and more effective. And so that would help people to get the cobwebs out, get you to a place where you can at least hear that you can choose life and not death. And so, you know, big shout out to that part of this fight, you know, the people are in it. So, you know, but once we come together as a whole, I think we're gonna kick some butt with the addiction in West Virginia and all across the country. I believe that we're headed toward becoming the model for recovery, and I think that the Recovery Cafe would be a great addition, someplace where we can start, because it's not that the people are addicted. It's just after you get clean, what do you do? How do you stay stopped? You know, and so I invite conversations from people who are impacted negatively about it, or people who have a positive opinion about where we are. And so you got to be part of the solution and, you know, not such a part of the problem. Bobby Womack, and coming out of the area where heroin was on the streets of New York and Chicago and those places, you know, it has stepped out of the recesses, you know, and it's coming full circle. Grandma was always addicted. We just didn't realize that what she was doing with her rheumatism medicine. You know, I heard tell that was heroin and morphine, and they sold it in the corner drugstore way back in the day. But we can look at some of those conversations, do some research. One of the things that I use to actually stay stopped is to get involved. Pick up a book and read. We have to be able to get you in a place where when you feel like you're going to relapse, that has to be redirected to something. You know, we have to have some redirection training going on so that you can intervene. One of the main things that you need to do, and everybody got them, you pick up the cell phone. Call me, 304-839-7924. And if you call me and you need a ride or you need to get off the street, I got somebody I can send you to. You know, I'm not taking nobody anywhere unless my sponsor tells me to. I'm going to be right here using whatever platform I can in Berkeley and Jefferson County to get you off the street. But you got some people that will pick you up and drive you where you need. We're going to take all the excuses out of the way. And then we got to deal with the economic part of it. You know, we got people over at DHHR and people at city council, you know, the policemen. Everybody wants to help. We want to get rid of this stuff. I'm not one for just stopping it or arresting it. I want to annihilate it. I want to get it out, because for me, it's a non-issue as to whether I will put that poison in me, you know, unless I go, I'm on the operating table. In that respect, I won't know what's going on, because that's one of the things they do give you when you go under the knife. And so, you know, you just have to choose when you are able to make a choice. I don't want to make it sound like it's so easy, because I for one know it's not that easy to just stay stopped. It's really not. I understand it's traumatizing when you go from one behavior to another, and I think that the community expects you to be able to do that. You just get him into treatment. Well, okay, you got a set of folks that will just get him into treatment. What about after rehab, when he comes out of treatment? What are you going to say to him then? What is the direction you're going to send him in then? And so, you know, we have folk who can work with the kids, but I think that my position in this is to deal with you adults, people that's like in their 30s and 40s. And, you know, we got teams of people who are that age bracket, and I like to, you know, pair people up. Come to the Recovery Cafe and sit down and have a chess game with somebody, or a bid whist. All you domino players, we can sit down and have a conversation. You know, or I have a lady, Miss Consuela. I love Consuela. She can teach us how to have a proper tea. I never knew I liked something like that until I got clean and sober. A proper tea. It sounds like England, and I think Consuela would probably give us a visit with her conversations about having a proper tea. Those are just some of the things that, you know, would be invited into the community of the Recovery Cafe. And but we're going to need your help. We really are. Berkeley, Jefferson County. I'm going to be putting together some fundraisers or some donation pages and everything. We need this equipment to come into Enlighten Radio that we can. We need our own radio station. That we need an antenna. We need the whole nine yards. I wish somebody would get in touch with somebody like Oprah Winfrey. You know, I know she understands what I'm talking about, but she got a lot of money she can pump in here. So start a letter writing campaign. We need to not sit back in our living rooms. If the fire, your neighbor's house is on fire, you're not going to wait until the fire reaches your house to come and help. We need help right now from one another, and we can do it. We have to stop depending on the big government to help us to stay alive. We got to choose life. And so I just invite you all. I appreciate it. So right now I'm going to try and end this with I hope something that I said helps, and I hope that you tune in with me each week. I'm going to try to end on Anthony Brown, a song that I hold dear to my heart because I believe that's what happened to me. Anthony Brown is "You Thought I Was Worth Saving." And I want you to kind of listen to his words as we end this broadcast and tell me what you think. We're getting there. Just hang in there with me. Yeah, so usually, okay, 9 o'clock, we usually start, and I'm going to try and put some program together. Actually, I would invite someone to call me if you're a programmer or an engineer. So here we go.
Anthony Brown. So you came and changed my life. You thought I was worth keeping. So you cleaned me up inside. You thought I was to die for. So you sacrificed your life so I could be free, so I could be whole, and I could tell everyone I know. So you thought I was worth. So you came. You thought I was worth it. You cleaned me up inside. You thought I was to die for. So you sacrificed your life so I could be free. Hold up, everyone. You thought I was worth. So you came. You thought I was worth keeping. So you cleaned me up and you thought I was to die for. so I can be free. So you thought I was worth keeping. So you cleaned me up and you thought I was to die for. So you sacrificed, hallelujah, so I could be free, so I could be whole, and I could tell everyone. One more time, you thought I. So you came out and
changed my life.
You thought I was worth. So you cleaned me up inside. You thought I was to die for. So you sacrificed your life so I could be free. Your life. He thought you were worth.